Ladies and gentlemen, that is the fight song of the Miami Redhawks, the alma mater, the gentleman who joins us right now on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline, and of suddenly available NFL head coach John Harbaugh. It's Mr. Chris Rose. Hello, Chris.
What's happening, Chris?
That would be the undefeated mighty Miami Redhawk.
How about that?
Incredible.
Yeah, really big win incredible. Over the Akron Zips the other day. Brothers coaching against each other, John Gross and Travis Steele.
Yeah. It's, let's hope they build up enough resume where if they have a little slippage somewhere down the road in that MAC tournament that, you know, they don't get denied. But, wow, what an incredible run
for
mighty Miami.
Absolutely. Congratulations. Now, as a Miami alum,
yeah,
can you get busy? Can you get John on the phone? John,
yeah.
Chris here. I know we haven't seen each other since the last Red Hawk alum meeting, but you know, I have family in Cleveland. You can stay with them when you're looking for your new place. What can you do for us, Chris Rose?
Well, we did have a nice talk a few years ago at the at NFL Honors. We talked a lot about Miami.
See?
I'm not so sure whether that means I could get through today to him to change whatever plans he already has in terms of probably visiting the New York area for one. I would like to say I have some pull. I'm going to guess it probably isn't in this area.
Is he number one on your coaching list for the Cleveland Browns, Chris?
Well, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't he be? We talked about this possibility over a month ago, and I said, be careful what you wish for if the Browns do move on from Kevin Stefanski, because the list of coaches will not – it doesn't mean that they won't be successful. It just means it's not – it doesn't have the wow factor that it had last year with Ben Johnson and Mike Vrabel being available. I mean, it just didn't. And then things changed less than 24 hours ago. And I guarantee you there's a bunch of coaches that think they're employed right now for 2026 that are on shaky ground, because John Harbaugh, I think, is that good at his job.
And apparently his agent has heard from seven teams. He wouldn't have heard Ravens. So there's somebody who has a coach who inquired.
Yeah, believe what was written in The Athletic today, it's upwards of nine.
So, I don't doubt that.
I don't either. I don't either. And why, you know, if you're an NFL, I mean, look, it happened last year in Jacksonville as well, from the personnel side of things, right? Trent Baalke was supposed to stay on. Chad Khan had made that announcement, and then, you know, Liam Cohen comes in, and they're like, "Nah, he's going to hit the road." So there are whether it's personnel changes or head coaching changes that still could happen. I mean, I don't think that Joe Shane is feeling great about where he is today with the Giants, but who knows, maybe they'll keep him around so they don't have to change things. But my guess is that Harbaugh is going to, you know, want some say in things.
Chris Rose joining us, NFL Network, John Boy Media, and of course a Cleveland guy. So he's thinking Browns, does Browns preseason games on the Browns preseason television network. I threw this out earlier, Chris, and I might be alone in this thought. I think there are other factors that go into decisions that coaches make, especially guys who have established track records. And my thought was, and this is nothing against the Haslams, with Steve Bisciotti, he had a really laid-back owner who loves stability, and the Haslams just gave Kevin Stefanski 6 years, and Andrew Berry's been here longer. I wonder, would he not want to work for as involved of an owner as the Haslams probably are? Not as involved as Jerry Jones, certainly, and the Haslams are allowed to do anything they want. Would he want to come to the team that he rooted for as a kid, where, you know, his mom's from Cleveland? Would those factors outweigh other factors here? I think that's how he ends up here, if he ends up here at all, because I wouldn't think that the Browns would be his number one choice.
Well, I mean, I think the number one thing, and he's no dummy, particularly since he's leaving a two-time league MVP quarterback behind, is that.
Yeah.
Do I like the quarterback that's here? I mean, particularly if he's young, right? I mean, Jackson Dart, I don't know how much you watched him play, but he looked pretty good. I wouldn't say, like, wow, out of this world great, but certainly something that you can build upon. And I think that that's a big deal for guys who have choices. You know, I think that that's a – I don't know what percentage of the pie it is, but it's big. And unfortunately, we are – if you were to rank the seven job openings in terms of quarterback security, it's six or seven.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah, I mean, that's – you know, the Raiders are on the clock. So if they – if you like Mendoza, then you could say, well, I could work with the rest of it. If you did any work on Cam Ward and say, boy, they didn't have much around him, but I like kind of who he is and some of the throws he made this year, and I feel like I could work with him. And Jackson Dart, we just talked about him. The situation in Atlanta is obviously a little wonky, probably a lot wonky. Arizona, who knows whether the next coach wants to ride the Kyler Murray Express or not, or they want to go a different direction. But my point is this, is that with our situation, like, if you were to ask me who's going to take the first snaps of 2026, I have zero idea, really. I mean, I think it's either Shador or Deshaun Watson, but maybe something could surprise me. And how enticing is that? I don't know.
Chris Rose joining us on the hotline. Chris, what do you make of the Browns moving on from Kevin Stefanski and keeping Andrew Berry here?
I mean, first of all, I was sad because whenever there's a coaching change, it means something didn't work out. Yeah. And although I'm not surprised that Andrew stuck around, I will say this. I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him to get this right. And, you know, what you're doing is you're kind of getting on board the front office head coaching teeter-totter. And when you don't bring in guys at the same time, that is the risk you run. How long does – I mean, if things go sideways next year, does Andrew become the one that bears the brunt of that responsibility? I don't know. All I can tell you is this, is that the area where this team has been the weakest in drafting over the last 6 years is the area where they have to be the best. And so the Browns made this decision. A lot of this pressure is on Andrew and his crew to get the offensive line and the wide receiver room up to standard because it is not close to where it needs to be right now. So now the one thing we don't know is what role Paul D. Podesta played in that. You know, did he overrule some of the stuff when it came to the draft in terms of leading the analytics team when it came to leaning one way or another on offensive linemen and wide receivers, because it just, quite frankly, has not been good enough. Go look at the dozen or so players we've drafted on the offensive line and wide receiver combined, and the best ones I can come up with are Jed Wills, and I guess, like, Tillman and DPJ are tied, I think, for wide receiver. Point is that those aren't —
you summed it up well.
Starting caliber guys.
Yeah. How attractive is Kevin Stefanski to other teams?
I think pretty attractive. And I think nationally, obviously, the perspective on Kevin is significantly different than the one in Cleveland, right? Some national pundits or whomever's in front of a microphone these days, they're only taste of Kevin Stefanski is how he handled the Shador Sanders situation. So they're like, blow him out. Here we go. This is the way it goes. Yeah, he didn't give him any first-team reps. He doesn't know what he's doing. Like, I don't think that's fair. Do I think that the Browns handled that situation well? Not great. I think if they had to do it all over again, they probably would look at it a little differently. It's probably a little bit more of an indictment on how they saw Dylan Gabriel, and I don't know where, I'll be honest with you, I don't know whose evaluation that was. I do wish that people would stop with the whole, well, look at the number of players we could have had at 94 instead. Folks, this draft was crushed. You could do that with every draft class in the history of the sport for every team. You're always going to whiff. Nobody thought at 94 that they were getting a franchise quarterback. I think they felt like, and Andrew has said this, that we look at quarterback as a top 30 spot on the roster, meaning out of 53 spots, we think backup quarterback is that important. And I think that that's the way they looked at it. They felt like we could get a backup quarterback. The unfortunate thing is we didn't really have a starting quarterback when they made that choice. So that's the, to me, that's the faultiness of the, you know, of the decision. It's not that they took him. It's that there wasn't really a starter there to then have a credible backup with. Does that all make sense? Am I explaining it right?
Yes, okay. And I'm going to take what you said about playing the draft game and record it and replay it for the gentleman sitting to my left right now when he goes to do it later on.
Yeah, well, it's just like...
That's right. I'm throwing you right under the bus for that, Jeff.
Sure did.
You sure did, yeah. I just don't understand. We think we got a pretty good defensive tackle. It's always hard to tell with defensive tackles, particularly when they don't put up huge sack numbers, right? It's hard for us as just kind of common fans to tell how Mason Graham played.
We all Everything like his upside, read, though, Chris. We like his upside.
Yeah, but he also, I think he played pretty well in this system.
Agreed.
Really did.
Yep.
Okay. Our 2 second-round picks, very good. Our first third-round pick, outstanding, right? And Dillon Gabriel was the 5th pick of this draft. He wasn't the 3rd pick, like a lot of third-rounders are. He was the 5th pick. So does it feel like a whiff? Yeah, it doesn't feel great. But nobody picked him to go number 94 overall. You tell me a team who is like, yep, 94th pick of the draft is going to be our starting quarterback. You go tell me one, because I can't find a team that's ever done that.
Your gut tells you the Browns end up with, I won't even ask who, but if you want to say who, fine. What kind of a coach? Coordinator? Former head coach? Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, I think that's the name I mentioned when we first did this merry-go-round about a possibility. I felt like he's a guy who, who can get the offense back on track, who does have a history, and a good history. I mean, he's had a good, there's a lot of coaches in this league that have stalked the sidelines at some point who would take Mike McCarthy's resume in a heartbeat, you know. Is he the ideal candidate? No, because he's 62 instead of 42. And it skews old, like old school football instead of innovative and moving forward.
Could say the same about John Harbaugh, age-wise.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, you could say that about John Harbaugh. There are people that will, that will say that. There are people that will say, well, geez, you know, he won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco, and Lamar Jackson can run laps around Joe Flacco talent-wise. So why didn't that happen? And, you know, over the last 5 years, his team blew a dozen games where they had a double-digit lead. That's a lot. So he does have things to answer for. But if I had to guess, I think McCarthy is a pretty good – I'm not going to say safe bet, but I think that that's an acceptable answer on your paper, guys.
Chris, thank you for your time today, sir.
Appreciate it, man.
Always appreciate it.
Get on the phone with the Alumni Association. Make it work.
Yeah. I'll get right on that.
As if the NFL coaching cycle wasn't interesting enough, it became red hot yesterday as John Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens parting ways after 18 seasons. What does that mean for the Cleveland Browns, a team that needs a head coach, a team that needs a lot of things? Well, there's a head coach from the division available now, a gentleman who is all over it on his website, profootballtalk.com, and you see him on NBC every Sunday, all playoffs long, joins us right now on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. He is Mr. Mike Florio. Hello, Mike.
How are you, Mike?
Gentlemen, how are you? Are you suggesting the Browns are dysfunctional? Because they're definitely not dysfunctional. Don't call the Browns dysfunctional. I thank you on behalf of Jimmy Haslam.
We did get that message the other day, did we not?
isn't that like the worst way to handle something that bothers you? Didn't we learn that as kids? When they give us a nickname we don't like, if we act like it bothers us, what happens? We're called that same name 50 years later. If you act like it don't bother you, then that's the way, or more accurately in this situation, stop being dysfunctional and they'll stop calling you dysfunctional.
Well, there's a lot of validity to what you said, Mr. Florio.
Mm-hmm.
That's you,
especially as someone who got picked on a lot as a kid. You're 100% right.
You
My
can
mom
ignore
did tell
some
me
things.
That.
You can ignore some things. John Harbaugh is out there. He's available. He's from this area. He likes this area. He grew up a Browns fan. His mom's from Cleveland. Does that mean anything?
Well, I think it should. Now, again, we don't know what a dysfunctional team is going to do. A properly functioning team would be at the front of the line to try to hire John Harbaugh, period. And I'd like to think that the decision to make Kevin Stefanski the fall guy for the disastrous and dysfunctional Deshaun Watson trade and contract, I'd like to think they had a plan for upgrading above Kevin Stefanski and that they had someone in mind who would be willing to take that job. Because frankly, if I have options, I'm not taking that job. I'm not going to work for the Browns. No way, no how. And the Browns need someone that the fans will feel good about, not just because the Browns need them to renew their season tickets. I think this move was about the inevitable PSL prices that are going to come out. They did a survey back in December. I don't think it went over very well, but they're going to expect fans to help finance that new stadium by making those lump sum payments for the fiction of leasing the ability to sit in the tickets they're eventually going to buy. The fans have to feel good about that. They need a coach that's going to make the fans feel better about the team. And unless you swing for the fences and bring in a big name, an established name that's going to cause people to believe things will change, even if they don't, you need them to think things will change. So if they don't already have somebody else in mind, they need to get after Harbaugh immediately.
Do you think there would be any kind of issue with having Andrew Berry stay along when it comes to bringing in John Harbaugh?
Well, I don't know. Without knowing what Harbaugh would want and how much power he's going to have. But the reality is, if teams are clamoring for him, he does have more juice than he otherwise would have. And if Harbaugh says to Jimmy Haslam, I'm interested in the job, but I'd like to have control over the construction of the front office, then Haslam's going to have to decide, is he willing to move on from Andrew Berry to get the coach that he wants? And I know plenty of people are asking the fair question of why it's Stefanski and not Berry who's taken the fall, because all of the things that Haslam said in justifying the move from Stefanski, those same things apply to Andrew Berry. And I don't think Andrew Berry won two Executive of the Year awards in the years that the Browns somehow cobbled together enough wins to get to the playoffs under Stefanski. He's a two-time coach of the year because he went to the playoffs two times when people would look at it and say, how in the hell did the Browns make the playoffs? Like, you're defying all expectations, especially in 2023, the second year of the failed Deshaun Watson experiment when they got Joe Flacco off the couch to come in and finish the job. So, look, nothing against Andrew Berry. I just think in a situation like this, and I'm never a big fan of half measures, I think that the GM and the coach need to have equal accountability in any football operation, because when you allow an environment to exist where one guy stays and one guy goes, what happens is when the team encounters adversity, and every team does at some point, that's when the coach and the GM realize, I'm going to go to my separate corner here and I'm going to blame the other guy. And it always hurts the coach, because during the games, the GM is the one who's in position to whisper to the owner about all the things the coach is doing wrong. And the coach can't do anything to defend himself in that setting. And that happens in every sport. The people who are sitting with the owner when things aren't going well on the field, they make the case for why the guy down there doing the job of coaching the team is the guy who's not getting it done the right way. So to answer your question, if they really want Harbaugh, Harbaugh is going to be able to dictate terms. And Harbaugh may put Jimmy Haslam in a position where if he wants Harbaugh, he's going to have to be willing to clean out the front office. But again, we don't even know that the Browns are going to make a run at Harbaugh. We'll see. The Giants have been very aggressive so far. They're already the betting favorites to the extent that means anything. There are teams out there that don't even have vacancies who are calling about Harbaugh. So if you want him, you're going to have to move quickly. And it makes plenty of sense for the Browns to try to pick off a longtime Ravens coach and bring some of what he's done in Baltimore over the last 18 years, 12 playoff appearances. And I know that they've underachieved in recent years, but still, this is a guy who is going to land somewhere, and maybe he won't even want to come to the Browns. I don't know. But the Browns need to be exploring whether or not they have a shot at bringing in a guy who could make them that consistent playoff contender, not Super Bowl contender. Let's start with consistent playoff contender and then go from there.
Mike Florio joining us, Pro Football Talk. You see him on NBC, author of Big Shield. Not about the NFL, correct? Isn't that what your lawyer would say?
No, not about the NFL. And then the Browns aren't dysfunctional. It's kind of the same, thing.
Kevin Stefanski should fall where on other teams' coaching wish lists?
Well, he was the betting favorite to be the Giants head coach, and he's interviewing with the Giants, and he would probably prefer that John Harbaugh not have been fired by the Ravens, but I think that he'll have options, he'll have opportunities. You know, anybody that is evaluating Kevin Stefanski needs to do a fair assessment of what he did, given with what he had to work with. And I think people in the business will look at Stefanski and realize he did a pretty good job, given there are just too many chefs in the operation. What did Paul DePodesta do, chief strategy officer? Did he ever have a good strategy? I mean, let's be fair about it. What did they do during that 10-year stretch other than be horrible? And they were intentionally horrible for a while. They had that incentive plan where coaches and executives got extra money for carrying over cap space and stockpiling draft picks, which was a fancy way of tanking. And they did. Now, did they get the payoff on the back end? No, in part because of Deshaun Watson. But I think that, and look, he'll never admit this because this is part of the gig. You want to be able to meddle, but you don't want it to look like you're meddling. So others in the organization are the ones who take the blame for the decisions that go poorly. But I just think that, I don't want to say Stefanski was coaching with one arm tied behind his back, but what did he really have there? You know, you look at Stefanski, two playoff appearances in 6 years. Zach Taylor has two in 7 years. Zach Taylor isn't going anywhere. And Zach Taylor's had Joe Burrow. So I think Stefanski did a good job with what he had. And I think folks who get it will recognize that Stefanski is somebody that needs to be taken seriously as a candidate in a year where there aren't a lot of clear-cut, obvious, these are the guys we need to go out and try to hire. That's one of the reasons Harbaugh is so hot. There isn't that Ben Johnson this year. There isn't that guy that everyone's lining up for. And even though Stefanski ultimately didn't do well enough to stay in Cleveland, I think that folks who understand how it works will recognize that Stefanski did the best that he could to make it work during his time with the Browns.
Mike Florio joining us on the hotline and helping all of us put the fun and dysfunctional along the way. You can read his book, Big Shield, as well. You can get that on Amazon, anywhere else that they are. Mike, is there like a hot coordinator candidate that we're really not paying attention to that we should circle as somebody the Browns should be interested in, who you're hearing in circles?
I mean, usually by now we know who the hot coordinator is. Now, there could be a guy that, you know, has a much higher profile within the walls of the organizations, and they're keeping their mouths shut because they don't want there to be a land rush. They don't want to have to overpay. Teams don't like to overpay coaches. We used to hear, oh, there's no salary cap for coaches, but you know what? There's no salary floor. They don't like to have to pay somebody a ton of money. So there isn't that guy yet. Maybe once a guy starts doing interviews and they're like, oh, I really like his plan. Oh, I really like his vision. Oh, I really like how he communicates. This becomes a guy who suddenly is a lot hotter. But, you know, one of the problems is you look at the teams that are among the best in the NFL this year. Like if Josh McDaniels hadn't had two failed head coaching stints, he'd be one of the hot candidates this year. Vance Joseph, I think, is going to emerge as someone that may get his second shot finally because of what he's done with the Broncos defense this year and last year. But, you know, the guys who have never been head coaches before, I wrote this the other day, I think it's going to be very hard for them to get jobs in this cycle. Most of these teams are going to be looking for coaches who have been a head coach at some level before, college or pro, and there isn't that guy who's just been pegged as, you know, a no-brainer future head coach. It's just not there in this cycle.
Where does Mike McCarthy fit, Mike?
Well, hey, this is a guy who had a lot of success with the Green Bay Packers, but you could argue he didn't do nearly as much as he could have, given that he had Aaron Rodgers for all those years. With the Cowboys, it was mixed results. I still think back to that playoff loss to the Packers a couple of years ago when the Cowboys had a really strong season. They were the number two seed, and the Packers rolled in as the seventh seed and blew them out. And I remember McCarthy said after the game, "I don't think anyone saw this coming." My reaction was, well, if anyone should have seen it coming, it's the head coach of the team that was grinding the tape and preparing his team and recognizing that the Packers got really hot down the stretch and they were a force to be reckoned with. So I really don't know. He took a year off the last time in between jobs and landed with the Cowboys. You know, he's going to get interviews. The question is, does he merit a third shot? It's why the second job that a coach takes is so critical. I think it's very hard to get a third job in the NFL. And this will be job number three for McCarthy. He's in his early 60s, although, look, I believe that age should not matter. I know that the NFL has a subtle, unexplored ageism issue. And, hey, I know Pete Carroll got hired last year, but that's the exception. They're always looking for the young, up-and-coming guy who's ideally going to be there for 20 years if it all works out. But, you know, there's some factors that would favor giving McCarthy a fair shake. Whether or not he gets an offer and takes it, that remains to be seen.
Mike, do you see the Browns quarterback situation as being any kind of a bump in the road for any coach that's coming in here between Shedeur Sanders and or Deshaun Watson?
Well, they're going to have Deshaun Watson on the roster this year. They need to finish that contract in order to layer the salary cap consequences the way that they need to. The bulk of that deal still hasn't hit the cap yet, given the way they've structured it. They kick the can every year, but he'll be back next year. And Shedeur's under contract for three more years. And whoever the new coach is going to have opinions on who he thinks should be playing quarterback. And that coach may have an opinion on someone else who's going to be available. There's always a quarterback carousel that spins after the coaching carousel comes to a full stop, not just head coaches, but also offensive coordinators. And those folks have relationships, they have opinions, they have viewpoints on who they think can run their system. You know, this is one of the realities too. Coaches have their systems, and some coaches will be very inflexible about it. They will want a quarterback who can run their system. They won't be inclined to change their system to meet the skills and abilities and also conceal the limitations of whoever the quarterback is. And that's part of this factor as well. Remember when McDaniels got his first job with the Broncos in 2009, first order of business, run off Jay Cutler. So a lot of times I think coaches will take those jobs and maybe they'll say all the right things on the way in. Oh, yeah, I'll use this quarterback. I like this quarterback. And then once you get the job and you get the 5-year guaranteed contract, a different reality unfolds.
Mike Florio joining us. Mike, we've seen various opinions. Where are these jobs ranked? Most attractive, least attractive? I've seen the Browns 3. In a couple behind the Ravens and the Giants, and I've seen them as low as 6. Where would you put this job?
Well, it's on the low end, despite the fact that the team is definitely not dysfunctional. It's on the low end because there are factors at play that I don't think you're going to, unless you're confident. And one of the things I've learned from sitting next to Jason Garrett for the past few years at NBC, as you're a head coach, your most important job is to manage down, right? You're running the roster. You're in charge of the team, and you have to manage the players who report to you. There's also a challenge that comes from managing up, and Jason Garrett clearly had to manage up in Dallas. He was dealing with an owner/GM who was very involved with the team, and they found a way in 2014 to get Jerry Jones to not want and insist on the selection of Johnny Manziel with a first-round pick. The Browns' structure in place was unable to get Jimmy Haslam, or the homeless guy that Jimmy retained as an unpaid consultant for the day that he was walking into the facility and decided Manziel was the pick. They weren't able to manage up to get him to not do that. So you need a coach who's going to be willing and able to manage up and take control of the organization. I put it low on the spectrum because, I mean, really, let's go all the way back to 2012. From the moment Jimmy Haslam bought the team has been definitely not dysfunctional. And the dysfunction or not dysfunction in any organization begins at the top. And bad teams stay bad, not because of bad luck or divine intervention or lack thereof, they're bad because the owners are dysfunctional and the owners don't know how to properly run a team. They don't know how to get out of the way. They don't know how to hire the right people who can manage the team while the owner just behaves as a glorified fan. That's the challenge, because we all think it's easy. It looks easy. It's an accessible sport, and we think we understand it. And when you own the team, you got the right to do whatever you want, and no one can fire you, and that's the problem. So long story bearable, I'd put the Browns low. And frankly, I wouldn't put the Ravens as high as others are putting them. You're walking into a mess in Baltimore. First of all, you got a guy who's been there 18 years and won a Super Bowl and was a consistent contender, so the expectations are going to be higher. Second of all, you got to figure out whatever it is that's keeping Lamar Jackson from getting the most out of his potential, and you've got an aging, expensive roster. I think that whoever takes that Ravens job is going to have a hell of a time continuing the legacy that Harbaugh created.
Mike, how stable do you think the footing is Sean McDermott is in if they don't make the AFC Championship, per se?
Well, it all comes down to what the owner wants to do. And at this point, you're getting deeper and deeper into Josh Allen's prime. And this is a playoff run that will not include Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, or Lamar Jackson. This is the best chance that they've had. But they're the sixth seed. And they're going on the road to face the Jacksonville Jaguars. Are they six or are they seven? For some reason, I can't keep that straight. Regardless, they have to go play the Jaguars. The Jaguars overall are a better team right now. And if they lose that game, it won't surprise me if ownership decides to make changes. I think the real question in Buffalo, is it the talent or is it the coaching of the talent? And is it both? Look, as I said earlier, I don't like half measures. I think if the Bills do anything, they need a clean house. And what an attractive job that would be if the Buffalo Bills job becomes open. And I thought it was very interesting that John Harbaugh's agent made it clear that seven teams called with only six vacancies other than the Ravens. There's at least one team, maybe more than one team, that doesn't have a vacancy now that made a phone call. I don't know that swapping out one coach who has failed to get a generational talent to the Super Bowl for another coach who has failed to get a generational talent to the Super Bowl is the answer. But whether it's Harbaugh or someone else, I could see Terry Pegula, the owner of the team, deciding, I need an offensive specialist to come in here and get the most out of Josh Allen in the years that he has left that he'll be playing at a ridiculously high level.
Mike, thank you for your time today. Busy time, and we appreciate you carving it out for us. He's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC, and of course, Big Shield, a very functional book about professional football, not the NFL.
Appreciate it, Mike.
And I was going to say, I've been called many things, and if you want to call me dysfunctional, that's absolutely fine.
Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. Menigan's in for Baskin today. I'm Jeff Phelps. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, was just with us here on the show. And Mike, pretty strong thought. If you're the Browns, you go get him. You go get John Harbaugh. You do everything you can to get him, bring him in here, and let him take care of it. Let him fix it. Good coach, great track record, still wants to coach, wants to be the man. You go get him, and you go get him now. I thought it was really, from the national perspective, I thought it was interesting because, Dan, it seemed like he thought the Browns might be able to pull it off.
We know how Jimmy Haslam works. We know that Jimmy Haslam doesn't really take no for an answer. I mean, goodness, the Deshaun Watson case,
has
that one home.
Checking account to prove it.
Yep. If that's the guy that he wants, then that's the guy he's going to go after. And that's the guy who he will do everything he can in his power to get here. The question I have with it is, does John Harbaugh want to do it? Because I don't want this to be Monty Williams. That was such a disaster in Detroit. And I know that was a little bit different because he was dealing with family stuff in between. He didn't want to coach in anywhere. And he didn't want to coach in Detroit. And his heart wasn't completely in it. And it blew up. And I don't want that for the Cleveland Browns. That's my fear in all of this. Is that if his heart isn't there and he's just doing it for the check.
But that's not what we're hearing.
Right.
We're hearing the guy wants to coach.
Right. It's just, I have to get that out there. I have to put that disclaimer out there on all of this stuff because that went so poorly and has stuck with me of how bad that went with Monty Williams. So I would do the same. I would go get John Harbaugh again right now. I would.
If it means you have to make a change in the front office, you would do it.
Take care. Andrew Berry, thank you for everything you've done. We've got it for here. Like, it's that simple. There are certain guys.
I would agree with that.
There are certain guys that come along that would cause you to blow everything up in the same way that the Jags had to with Trent Baalke. They didn't want to move on from Trent Baalke, but the minute Liam Cohen said, you get rid of that guy, I'm in, done.
You know what's interesting to me is that, and you and I have talked about this extensively, we thought Kevin Stefanski did good work here. Did he do great work? No. Didn't do great work. Did he do good work? Yeah.
Yes.
And I talked about consistently, look what he has to work with. Man, this is not about us. You're hearing a lot of people say the same thing now, including Mike Florio just saying the same thing, which is why I think there's a better than 50-50 chance Kevin ends up coaching one of these teams that's looking for a head coach right now.
Are there timeouts he should have called that he didn't?
Yep.
Yes. Are there fourth down plays that he shouldn't have ran that he did?
Trick plays inside the 10-yard line when he should have just handed it to Nick Chubb.
Did he give the ball to Nick Chubb enough? No.
In the right situations.
But again, we all want John Harbaugh. And you've pointed out before the fourth quarter situation where they didn't hand the ball to Derrick Henry enough, but instead made Lamar Jackson throw it.
And they lost the game because of it.
Every single coach has these things. Everybody. And especially now where we are so locked in on all the things that these coaches are doing wrong that I think sometimes it overshadows what these coaches do right. Look, I think it was time for the Browns to move on from Kevin Stefanski. I thought it was time.
You've said that even though you thought he did a solid job.
I think he's a damn good coach, and he's going to be a good coach wherever he gets hired next. And whoever that team is going to have somebody that's going to represent the organization well and is going to put them on a track for success. I just think it was time.
Could Kevin win a Super Bowl somewhere? Maybe. Could he end up being like Marty Schottenheimer? Marty was a really good football coach who ended up with four teams and never won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But you knew Marty was going to come in and run a good program and give you a chance to win football games.
Right. It's just sometimes it's just time. It's what they're saying in John Harbaugh. Just time.
Well, that's what they're saying. Trevor's in Cleveland. Trevor?
All right, Trevor.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well, all right, man.
Thank you.
First time caller.
Awesome. Thank you.
You guys touched on a lot of it, but my biggest thing looking at it is if he were to come here or wanted to come here, right, that's the biggest thing. I heard the report that Andrew Berry might take on some of the responsibility that Dee Podesta left. If that's the case, I mean, a CEO head coach is what you're looking for, right?
I would think so, but Harbaugh has always been that kind of a coach, and I'll say CEO, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't know his football. Guy was a special teams coordinator.
Right.
He had to coach everybody.
Yeah.
Which is, let's not forget, that's a weakness of ours right now, right?
Very much so.
Also, there seems to be, like, there would be a mutual respect between Jim Schwartz and Harbaugh, you would hope, which I think is a plus because you don't want to come into a situation and lose the one bright spot that we had this past year. But that being said, also, if we were to interview Todd Monken or want to, John knows that better than anybody else. So it seems like it would make a lot of sense if he were able to bring that or at least bring the same idea to rebuild an offense here, knowing that there isn't one.
Trevor, thank you.
Appreciate
Keep
it,
calling.
Trevor. A little bit of news that is coming down as well. Mary Kay Cab at Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Tommy Rees, Jim Schwartz will interview for the head coaching job of the Cleveland Browns tomorrow. On Thursday, they will do that. The Browns have also requested permission to interview Bengals offensive coordinator Dan Pitcher for their head coaching job as well, according to multiple reports. So, tomorrow, Rees and Schwartz interview for the head coaching gig.
What we haven't heard yet, does this mean anything to you? Haven't heard any other teams ask for permission to interview Tommy Rees or Jim Schwartz. That mean anything to you?
I think it's still early.
Okay.
I think it's still early. Now, it means something that these guys aren't like running in and immediately going, I need to talk to that guy now, immediately. I think that does kind of say something, but I wonder if we're going to see more and more of it, especially now with the news being out there that Rees and Schwartz are interested. I wonder if we see more of that with teams going like, oh, okay, I'll talk to Jim Schwartz. Oh, okay. Tommy Rees up and coming, offensive coordinator, offensive mind, did well at Alabama, had his moments here. Okay. Maybe that's somebody we're talking to as well.
And remember, this could be the case, too. The Browns in the past have interviewed guys, and then, we want to get familiar with you because we might slot you in somewhere else. If a new coach comes in here and doesn't want Tommy Rees's offensive coordinator, then Tommy Rees is suddenly available.
Exactly.
Same with Jim Schwartz.
Exactly. That's how all of this goes, by the way. Like, these guys are current employees, and then the new head coach will come in and say, all right, I want him, I want him, I want him. It's the same reason why, oh gosh, I goof his name up every single time. He was the special teams coach who lasted through everyone. It's not Tarver.
Chris Tabor.
Tabor, thank you. It's the same reason why he was able to last through everyone, is it's due to the fact that, like, this guy, the new coach comes in and they'll go, all right, I don't want you. I don't want you. You do a really good job. We'll hang on to you. Or I have a previous relationship with you. We'll hang on to you. Yeah. We'll hang on to this guy. You do a good job with the offensive line. Like, that's how all of this stuff ends up going when it comes to head coach hires. It's not like when somebody gets fired, the whole staff gets wiped. It's more the next guy up to them to go, all right, do you want him or do you not want him?
216-474-0092 is our number. Love to hear from you. We're going to talk to Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, coming up at 1 o'clock. Anything that happens with any of this coaching stuff, Dan just mentioning Schwartz and Rees interviewing with the Browns tomorrow. But the ownership has a big decision to make. The vice president of football operations has a big decision to make, Andrew Berry. Do you trust them to get it right? We'll give you some food for thought based on what they've done in the past, who they didn't hire, and who they talked to. Coming up next right here on Baskin and Phelps, Dan Menigan in for Andy.